Last week, the Senate was finally able to pass the Farm Bill. There were a lot of positive items in that bill. One of the most important provisions was a livestock competition title that put in place a much-needed reform, including a ban on mandatory arbitration and a ban on packer ownership of livestock. Despite the inclusions of these items, I'm very disappointed that a hard cap on payment limits was not included. We had a vast majority of the Senate vote for the Dorgan-Grassley Amendment, yet one senator was able to ensure that we needed a supermajority of votes. Now the Senate bill has a loophole that anybody could drive a tractor through, and I have no doubt that some will try. So today, I'm sending a letter to Chairman Harkin of the Senate Ag Committee and Chairman Colin Peterson of the House Ag Committee regarding the weakening of payment limits in the current version of the bill. The two chairmen have a unique opportunity to correct the huge loophole left in the Senate version and the lack of any sort of cap in the House version. It's time that we stand for real reform. Let's start with Gene, Iowa farmer.
Yes, Senator. What are the chances of trying to get something, get that reform through a conference committee? Obviously, it's not in either bill at the moment.
No, but don't forget the subject of limits are in, and it seemed to me that at the same way, the fact that there's no limit on LDPs in the Senate reform, and then there's no limit in the House, it's something that's subject to negotiations. And so I'm just going to have to do what I can to try to persuade them to do it. You know, I think it's very much an uphill battle, if you want me to analyze it for you. Very much an uphill battle. But I don't think I should give up. Don't get another opportunity for 5 years. And if I don't win re-election, I won't be around here to do it then. Tom at Brownfield.
Morning, Senator. What do you think about, characterize what's going to happen now in view of the of keeping the bill, perhaps veto-proof, of perhaps including what you would like into the bill? What do you think is going to happen in conference?
Well, I think I don't have to repeat what I'd like to have in the bill, because I think including what's already in the bill and what I tried to get a bill on the Senate floor and what I said this morning speaks for everything that I'm for. It's a little more difficult to predict a presidential veto because I don't know what the final item is going to do be like. And I think that a president is, quite frankly, stupid to be saying he's going to veto a bill when he's got an opportunity through negotiations to help tailor the bill so it won't be vetoed and be satisfactory. But I think these items are issues for presidential veto. The tax provisions in the House bill that comes from Ways and Means. And that's the only thing I've heard about the House bill. In the Senate bill, two things. The tax provisions that we put in, which are different than the House provisions, and in the Senate, reference by the House to what they call budget gimmicks to put some of the payments for the last year into the following year. In other words, on October the 2nd instead of September the 30th, and which is, in fact, a budget gimmick. As far as the tax policy on the House side, on the Senate side, I don't think the president has any right to find fault with it, because we raised $12 billion worth of revenue that you might think, well, we increased taxes to raise $12 billion of revenue. I would argue that that's not our goal. Our goal was to do what four circuit courts of appeal said we should do, and that is define the term economic substance in the tax code, because four courts have interpreted it in different ways. And so that's what we're doing, what the court said. It happens to raise $12 billion worth of revenue. And so good tax policy, if it's the right tax policy, and I think if you have four circuit courts of appeal saying you ought to do something, it ought to be considered good policy and not a tax increase, even though it raises revenue. And so the president should not use our tax policies as an excuse for vetoing. And I'll bet in the final analysis, the House will be glad to have our tax policy because it happens to bring in more revenue than what their bad tax policy brings in. Ken Root.
Good morning, Senator. A couple of things. Could you tell us the status now of this competition title? Did it make it through the Senate Farm Bill, and will it go to conference?
Yeah, it'll be in conference, and it includes two things. Well, it may include more than two things, but two that are really ought to be highlighted. One is to do away with mandatory arbitration, and this kind of puts the farmer on a level playing field with a packer. If you don't have mandatory arbitration, you can have arbitration, but the arbitration can be appealed to court, where usually under mandatory arbitration, it's final. And so then the farmer doesn't have access to what lawyers call discovery. So the farmer knows less than what the packer knows, and so it's kind of an on-level playing field type of arbitration. The other one is ban on packer ownership of livestock. And this is something I fought for in the last farm bill, and we got passed but got knocked out in conference. So those are the two provisions that are most important of the competition title.
Two words, Senator, that aren't used together very often, chicken in. It appears you put chicken into country of origin labeling for meats in the Senate version of the bill.
Yeah, that's right, and we should. I think that, well, now I don't know this for a fact. I suppose I could ask and find out, but I haven't. I believe it was not included in the original versions of that because of the political power of Tyson's. And I think somebody just decided to overcome the political power of Tyson's and got away with it. And thank God they did.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's see. The next person is Dan at Spencer.
Good morning, Senator. According to your schedule, you're planning to meet with Trade Ambassador Susan Schwab this afternoon to talk about the trade agenda for next year. Can you give us a preview of what that discussion will be?
Yeah. Of course, I'll let her set the agenda, but things I want to bring up with her is further plans to get Colombia and Panama through, which are kind of no-brainers. Still a little bit of update I need on Korea, where we are in Korea, and that's a beef and automobile issue, maybe a couple other issues, but for the most part, just beef and cars, autos. And then I would like to find out where we are on negotiations with Korea on those issues, get to the bottom of that, and hopefully get a Korea thing through yet next year. And then updates on the Doha round negotiations and connected with Doha round negotiations, the extent to which she's inhibited from doing much negotiation because Trade Promotion Authority has died. And I'm a promoter for reauthorizing it, but it's kind of an uphill battle here with the Democrat Congress to get Trade Promotion Authority reauthorized.
Senator, if I could follow up, the World Trade Organization launched an investigation yesterday into the farm subsidies, courtesy of Brazil and Canada, their request for an investigation. Where do you see that going? Will that be a topic of discussion with Ambassador Schwab?
Well, it could be a topic of discussion, but I'm not so concerned about that because it's such a long process. Instead of bringing litigation at the WTO, you probably know that Brazil and Canada ought to be focusing on bringing a successful conclusion to the Doha round. And in particular, Brazil ought to use its standing as a leader of the group that we call G20. That'd be 20 nations that are pretty well developed, but just below the level of Europe and Japan and United States, I guess. As a leader of G20, It ought to work for showing greater flexibility and providing better market access. And Brazil also should be more willing to lower its industrial tariffs. See, they're focusing on agriculture because they want to divert attention away from their high tariffs on manufacturing. Okay, let's see, that was Dan. Stacia? Philip of the Des Moines Register?
Yeah, Senator.
Yeah.
I had a question on renewable energy tax incentives. The ones that dropped, the wind energy extension was dropped out of the energy bill along with the other things. Question number one is what's going to happen with that to get that extended when it... And number two, what are the chances of those tax incentives that are still in the farm bill, particularly that for cellulosic and extension of biodiesel? What are the chances of that getting through conference?
Well, I hope it's got a good chance of getting through conference, quite frankly, because particularly biodiesel running out next year, whereas ethanol doesn't run out for a couple more years. It's pretty important to get that done. Pretty important to get wind done, because wind maybe is even in worse shape than biodiesel, because you got to manufacture so far ahead for wind that it kind of shuts down, as we did in 2004, if we don't get it done ahead of time, not just getting it done by the sunset, but quite a bit ahead of time. So it'd be very beneficial to the industries that are involved with biodiesel and wind to get that done soon, more importantly than anything else that are in the bills. And on the other hand, let me say this, that the R&D tax credit on related renewable fuels kind of drives all of the extenders, and there's multitudes of extenders beyond what we normally talk about. And sometime next year, it's going to get extended, and it's going to be retroactive to January the 1st. So I don't have any doubt one way or the other we're going to get it passed, but it would surely help, since the farm bill might get passed sooner than extenders next year. It would be good if we could get some of these in the farm bill.
What's critical to get in the farm bill? I assume you would get you put wind in the extenders package?
Well, no. Yeah, I suppose you're right. Yeah. Okay, anybody else?
Chair, Senator, this is Gary DiGiuseppe.
Go ahead, Gary.
During a press conference with USDA late last week, Undersecretary Keenum spoke of your competition title and suggested that creating a bar on corporate, on agribusiness ownership of livestock creates a slippery slope. He says, why single out that commodity, cattle and hogs, as opposed to others? That brings to mind, for instance, the increasing amount of contract production of specialty grains we have going on, grains with special traits. Do you see a time coming when you'll also want to take action to prohibit Pioneer and Monsanto and such from contract production of these commodities if it gets to the point, for instance, where they constitute a majority of the crop?
I think the answer might be yes, but I think it's a little bit related to how our democracy works. And if you go to livestock feeders in Iowa, you hear about the need for the ban on packer ownership of livestock, and that we're responding to that grassroots feeling. And if we start hearing the same thing from the grassroots about grain, we'll probably legislate in that area. And I think what we want to do is make sure that the marketplace works. And in the case of livestock, and looking at how packing houses have fought our efforts to get price discovery, to get things out in the open, it's pretty clear that the marketplace isn't working, and people are taking steps to make sure the marketplace doesn't work. And then you got comments you quote from some obscure person in the Department of Agriculture, probably venting for industry, where it isn't only industry against the farmers. You might have the U.S. Department of Agriculture plus industry against the farmers. And you get back to not a planned conspiracy against the family farmer, but a practical conspiracy against the farmer, even though you can't pinpoint responsibility for the actual institution of it. Okay, anybody else? Okay, thank you all very much.